This is a previously recorded episode.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're here with another edition of the M2 TechCast. Yes, whether you like it or not, we're back.
I think it's number 8.
Oh, is it already?
Is it 8?
Okay. All right. I wasn't here last week, so I'm glad to be back in the studio.
Yes, for you, it'd just be number 7.
Right, so. Right. I was a guest on my own show last week. That's kind of an interesting experience.
Yeah. Yeah, he's passing the mic back and forth. Where were you? CMU, I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, probably Ferris State on Monday afternoon.
Was it?
So, yeah.
Okay. In the studio with us, we have a drum roll, please. There we go. Okay. Who were with me originally and then came back. They were the former Digital Divas, now resurrected as Diva Tech Talk. And we have Kathleen Norton-Shark. Say hi, Kathleen.
Hi, everybody.
Amanda Lewan.
Hello.
And Nicole Johnson. I'm Scheffler, right?
Yeah, Nicole Johnson Scheffler.
Okay, right, yeah. I want to make sure I got that identification correct there. So.
And the Scheffler is new. How about that? Okay, that's cool.
All right, so we're going to do a few headlines here, and if you ladies have any headlines or plugs, that's what the bell is there for. If you do a shameless plug, Matt's in front of the bell there.
Oh, okay.
So, very good. So, what do you got?
Well, as we said last week, I was on my tech tour, and I just did want to mention that the tech tour is something I've been doing since 2003. For a couple of employers now, and I have been going around to Michigan colleges and universities in the fall and talking to them about sort of their most interesting science projects. And I just sort of wanted to mention that in the context of a lot of people ask, why does Michigan have to have so many colleges and universities? It seems like, you know, every town of more than 15 or 20,000 people in the state has got a state university in it. And my answer now, after seeing a lot of them, I visited, let's see, 8 of them in 7 days or something like that. It's because they're all so different. All of these science and engineering programs at these state universities, really only Michigan and Michigan State try to be an engineering Swiss Army knife. They try to offer everything. The rest of them have very unique offerings. Lake Superior State University in Sault Ste. Marie, smallest state college in Michigan, 2,300 students. Yeah. Terrific robotics program. That's what they've decided to specialize in. Ferris State, as we're going to hear later from one of our guests, has a really interesting HVAC program. And you're like, what could possibly be high-tech about heating and air conditioning? Building technology is very high-tech these days. And really, that's the last low-hanging fruit for us to save energy as a society. We've dealt with manufacturing, you know, factories and whatnot. We've dealt with transportation. But buildings are the other big part of the environment that uses a lot of energy. And we really haven't done a lot with buildings to make them more efficient. And they're doing that at Ferris State. There's all sorts of colleges around Michigan that are like that. Central Michigan University has a 3D laser chamber in their fashion design program, of all things. You go in and you get perfectly sized clothing. I mean, all of these schools, it's just really cool stuff. Western Michigan University has a program where they print circuits on paper with magnetic ink. And it works, you apply voltage to it, and it works just like an integrated circuit. I mean, it's cool stuff. You know, that's a nationally ranked program at Western.
Wow.
Matt, it sounds like you weren't at some of the schools I always think of. Did you go to Kettering?
I went to Kettering, yeah, and they're a terrific school. But you know, it's funny because we were there. You know, part of the reason we were there is because of my employer, the Engineering Society of Detroit. Okay, that's my plug for today, ESD.org. Might as well get in a good one. You know, we were there to see if sort of they needed our help. They don't need our help. You know, I mean, Kettering has a 100% plus, you know, placement rate for those students. They've got like 600 co-op partners. And it's a very unique educational model at Kettering. It's 4 terms pretty much year round. They take two weeks off at Christmas and 2 weeks off in the summer, and that's it. Other than that, you're in school for a term, and then you're at your job for a term. You know, so yeah, we did visit Kettering, but I was more interested in some of the smaller, you know, less well known engineering programs around the state, and it was really a lot of fun.
So I was under the impression that Kettering was you got your job and then you got into Kettering. Is it vice versa?
Yeah, you get there and you are presented with a bunch of opportunities. You do one semester on campus, or one term rather, on campus, and then you pick a co-op partner after that.
Okay,
so pretty heavy decision when you're like 17, 18 years old.
Yeah.
You know, it's really going to affect the direction of the rest of your life.
All right. Well, for mine, it's not quite as exciting as that, but I promised Dave Weaver that I'd get it in. So Great Lakes Angel on October 29th is having one of their monthly vetting of opportunities, and he's got four of them keyed up or teed up or whatever, probably a little keyed up too. And so it's a whole variety of things. Got advanced interactive. We've got responsive systems. We've got menutest.com. None of these companies of which I've heard of, but I suppose I should attend this thing just so I could figure out who the heck they are, right? And so there's several of them there, and they're going to be at UHY Advisors in Farmington Hills. And I can go to MI Tech News, and you can get the info on talking to Dave. But you have to be an accredited investor. That's the tricky part. And that means you have to have a few bucks to invest, and it isn't just like, you know, you're taking your bread money or something. you have to be, like, worth $1 million, so you have to be making $250,000 a year, I believe, is the criteria.
And you have to be willing to invest $25,000 at least once a year,
yeah,
right, in a company.
Right.
So, yeah.
And so they do these in syndicates, and that's why they vet these deals. They say, oh, they think thumbs up, thumbs down. And so you have a chance to see four of them. Although, if you think you're going to join, he does let people come in two times a year if you don't join, but after that, you know, he's going to make you join. So I've been to several of these. They're really interesting. He has some good deal flow through there. So if you are an investor, I would encourage you to check out Great Lakes Angels. Back to you, Matt.
All right. And I did want to mention there are a bunch of other angel groups around the state, too, that are worthy. There's Grand Angels in Grand Rapids. There's Blue Water Angels in the so-called, what they're now calling the Great Lakes Bay Area instead of Saginaw Bay. Although, what's wrong with
Saginaw? Midland, whatever. Same thing, right?
Yeah, Bay City, right. Okay, this one is interesting. I met with these folks several years ago when they were first getting started. It's a company in Allen Park. It's called Eco Motors. They got an investment from their Chinese partner. Zhongding Power signed a product development agreement with Eco Motors in 2010 and a licensing agreement in 2013, and now they like the company so much they've invested in it in a Series D equity investment. You've seen internal combustion engines, you know, a straight six, all the cylinders are in a straight line. You know, a V6 or a V8, the cylinders are in a V. This is called the OPOC. It's the OPOC, opposed piston, opposed cylinder engines. The pistons go in and out like that. They're sort of horizontally aligned.
Remember, we are on the radio, so they can't see your hands moving.
Yeah, that's so true. Okay. Well, picture me pressing my fists together. That's how the pistons work. Supposedly, that makes the engine lighter, more efficient, easier to build. They're claiming a 15% increase in fuel economy over a similar size, traditional internal combustion engine, and an even bigger improvement in manufacturability and in how cheap it is to build the thing. They're looking for it smaller ones for generators, medium-sized ones for vehicles, and really huge ones for big power generation and backup power applications.
Which I suspect will be the first one, right? Because then they get it all worked out, and then they do the smaller engines and all that jazz.
Yes,
right?
Yep. And this company from China is building a plant, a $200 million plant in China right now, that it has is going to have the capacity to produce an estimated 100,000 engines a year by next year.
Whoa.
So these things are going to hit the market, and they're going to be built in China, but the thing is engineered in Allen Park. So
wow.
It's a pretty interesting company.
Win-win. Okay.
Yep.
One of my associates, a friend of mine, Enrico Schaefer, who's an attorney up in Traverse City, known forever back in the old Connect Tech days. Remember those days?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
You betcha.
Nicole's nodding.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that's how I met him originally. But last summer, he started to specialize in drone law. Yes. And he's written a couple of really good pieces for me. He's actually, for a lawyer, he's not a bad writer. I was real surprised, to tell you the truth. You're not listening, are you, Enrico? Okay.
I'll send him an email, make sure he listens to it later.
Yeah, there you go.
Hopefully there are no attorneys in the audience.
Oh, of course not. No, we love our attorneys. Anyway, so he just wrote a piece that last week the FAA announced that for recreational drones, yeah, you're going to have to get special registration and certification and all that jazz. And I was just reading something after that that said they think they're going to sell 1 million drones for Christmas this year. Or wrap your mind around that one. Well, anyway, that's what this whole thing is about, is how is the FAA, which doesn't really manage the aircraft industry very well as it is, going to be able to handle 1 million drones with registrations and enforcement. So he has a long piece there that's actually gotten really good play. I put it on my LinkedIn account. It's like, boom. Exploded out there. So everybody wants to know. Oh, 5 minutes here. I'm getting flagged. So again, mitechnews.com. Check it out and learn all about it. Especially if you're thinking of buying a drone for Christmas, or daddy or mommy going to buy one for the little kiddies, you can get yourself in a heap of trouble real fast if you don't know the rules.
Yeah, especially where I am in Dearborn. Sometimes I check my roof for skid marks. You know, the planes seem to be going over so low there. You are in big trouble if you fly one of those things within 5 miles of a commercial airport.
Or above 500 feet, and there's all sorts of other restrictions.
Yep, but that's only if they catch you.
Hey. Nothing's illegal unless they catch you.
That's right. I'm an old business reporter, so I wanted to throw this in. We had a couple of big Michigan sort of tech-related companies report earnings last week. Dow Chemical Company had third quarter net income of $1.29 billion, up from $852 million a year earlier. That comes despite, this was interesting, this comes despite a sales decline. Actually, sales fell from $14 billion to $12 billion, but they're managing their business a whole lot better, it would seem, and so they managed to squeeze more profit out of less revenue. They've been selling a bunch of businesses at Dow Chemical. They sold their chlorine business. They've sold some other things. And they've jumped really both feet big into solar energy, both them and their Dow Corning subsidiary.
Don't they have solar shingles they
yes,
sell?
Yes, they have solar shingles, and they also make the polycrystalline silicon that makes up solar panels. That's the base material solar panels along with integrated circuits, and that's at a subsidiary called Hemlock Semiconductor, which is a really interesting place to visit because it is literally out in the middle of nowhere in along the border of Midland and Bay County. You're driving through sugar beet fields, and all of a sudden this enormous factory rises out of nothing. You know, it's just surrounded by pine trees. It's
is
really
it covered
strange.
In the silicon stuff, so it glistens and everything?
No, it's not particularly shiny.
Oh, okay.
So, all right. And the other one I wanted to mention, and this is just something I love to talk about and make fun of, is Whirlpool Corporation in good old Benton Harbor. Their net income went up to $235 million for the third quarter, up from $230 million a year earlier. Sales was a record $5.3 billion, up from $4.8 billion a year ago. And they keep talking about smart appliances. And that gives me an excuse to talk about smart appliances.
Matt and I were at the North American Cyber Summit this morning. You can see how I'm dressed, right? I'm on the radio. Anyway, I'm wearing a suit. So,
which is rare.
Rare, yes, indeed. So that came up. That just Internet of Things. Go ahead and connect it at your own risk, I guess.
Yeah, right? I always call it the Internet of Things that can be hacked. that's my term for it, because I'm not sure I want a computer on my refrigerator. You know, because not only could someone hack into it and turn it off when I'm on vacation, so I come home to a house full of rotten food smell, but they could use it as a gateway to get into the rest of my stuff at home, because you know it's going to be networked, right? I'm not sure that's such a great idea.
I would be more afraid that they would be checking out the content and therefore monitoring my lack of a diet.
Yeah. Nicole, look, you're leading in there.
I was going to say, with IoT and security, that's the biggest thing, whether you're looking at it from a consumer aspect, and I think that's the two sides, or an enterprise aspect. Securing it. Your fridge is one thing, but a machine that's critical to manufacturing is another, right?
Well, and copiers are another, yeah. Right? That's what they talk about, having wireless connections on copiers, because then they can hack into that and get every document out of your company. It's nuts.
That's Target.
Yeah. That is how they got in at Target, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Well, they also used hacked contractor identification at that big federal hack that they had last year. Earlier this year, the Office of Personnel, where they got records on just 22 million people, no big deal, you know, out of that one. And we also heard at that summit today about how that hack was discovered. It was a security vendor's demo. They just said, you know, let us demo our security product on your system. And they found 3 fake McAfee executables in their system that were shipping out information on.
That's a big duh.
22 million federal employees. So.
Hey, real quick here, we're running out of time for this segment, but to make me a millionaire. Well, sure. I love that idea. But actually, CNBC is having a big thing for inventors right now. And if you have a crazy idea that you think that the world wants to know more about, then CNBC wants to hear from you. idea or invention or a prototype, or you've gone through the patent process and said, "What? I can't do this," or you need money, or you just want to get exposure, CNBC will do all that if they like you, what you're doing, get you on the show and give you that publicity, and who knows what will happen after that. And again, you can find all that at mitechnews.com.
Okay, sounds good.
And I think that's it. Yes? No, I'm looking at Jessica here.
Okay.
Okay. Segment one is in the record books. Congratulations, right. Mike.
And we're going to come back with Neil Anderson from who's going to tell us about something you can use for the World Series to determine what's the optimal pitch to throw. Really?
Okay.
Mike Brennan.
And Matt Rausch, and we're back.
Yes, we are. For the second segment of the eighth show, we think. And with us calling in from East Lansing is Neil Anderson with Supported Intelligence, and he has this really cool product, Rapid Recursive, which, according to what I was told by him and several others at the company, you're going to be able to use to pick the optimal pitches during the World Series. Did I get that right?
That's right. We've used our software to come up with a model to help the pitcher decide what is the pitch that's going to maximize his chances of getting an out during the at-bat.
Well, how's that going to work exactly? Walk us right away. People are going, what? So you're going to have to get a little bit deeper into this to explain this. I know this is a big data thing that you're going to be crunching data. You looked at, what, million pitches or something, and that's how you came up with this database? Yes.
That's right. So each batter has strengths and weaknesses, and the pitcher's job is to pick a pitch that's either going to get a strike or lead to an out eventually. And MLB has installed this system called PitchFX, which records every single pitch that is thrown in every game throughout the entire season. So they have this system in all 30 of their major league stadiums. It's got three cameras, and the cameras take pictures of the ball and track its trajectory as it leaves the pitcher's hand to the moment it crosses the plate. And if you've ever seen the pitch trajectory on television, it was likely generated using this data. And so from this data, we can see every single pitch, and we've looked at every single pitch in the last 3 years, which is over a million. You can see for every batter, every pitch that he's seen, has he swung at it? You know, where was the pitch in the strike zone? Was it a curveball? Was it a fastball? You can see how that batter has performed. Did he get on base? Did he strike out? Did he hit a pop fly? So we take all of that data, we look at it, and we're able to use a predictive model to get an idea of how a batter is likely to respond to a pitch. So what we get is a probability. Let's say you throw fastball down the middle. We get a probability that the batter will take a ball on that pitch, because sometimes that pitch doesn't actually go through the strike zone. There's a probability that it's a strike. He swings, misses. There's a probability that he gets a hit. There's a probability that he hits it and it's caught. There's a probability that I think we've covered almost all the options. So
yeah,
probably that's each
it.
One of those.
Unless he just gives up and walks back or something. I don't think we covered that one. But so how are people going to be able to interact with this? How are you going to display this starting Tuesday?
That's right. So on Tuesday, we're going to know who's batting. We're going to know who's pitching. And we've run the model for every batter and for every pitcher. And so we have a recommendation, depending on what the count is, for the pitcher to throw in any area in the strike zone, and the type of pitch. So we're able to give you a sneak peek for the first pitch, which is likely going to be thrown to Curtis Granderson. So we recommend that they throw a curveball low and inside. And so we'll have that recommendation. We can do it for every pitch of the game. So after the first pitch against Curtis Granderson, we'll see, was it a ball, was it a strike, was it a hit, and we'll be able to give another recommendation.
And so you're going to have the players and the pitchers all wired up to your system so they know what's coming, right? No, I'm just
that's
kidding.
Right. Yeah, we'll have the lineup all set up, and we'll be tweeting those recommendations.
Ah, that's what I was getting to, is how could people interact with you on this? You're going to tweet this out, what you think the pitches are going to be? And
yeah, we're gonna tweet out our recommended pitch.
But as
we don't know whether the pitcher is going to follow it or not.
Well, pitchers never listen.
Better hope coach has Twitter.
I was going to say, Neil, if the batter knows what's coming, then that's an advantage to the batter rather than the pitcher, right?
Yeah.
Hello?
That's right.
That's
right. I suppose if everyone was on board and both the pitcher and the batter had access to this tool, we might have to add some extra things in there to give the batter a little bit more.
Well, finally, a use for the Apple Watch.
Yes, there you go. I like that. Very good
yeah,
to call.
That's right.
So we'll have to let MLB know about this so that they can give you some publicity during the World Series and see how accurately you're calling this, right?
That's right. So it'll be, the Twitter handle is @SmartPitcher. So that's where we'll be tweeting.
Okay.
Are your plans in the future to have some kind of analytics on this? In other words, so many accurate pitches that have been, that you have predicted and that you have helped, given over a 12-month period of time, is it your plan to somehow in the cloud provide those statistics back, not only to MLB, but perhaps to the betting public?
Ooh, yeah, I like that.
That's an idea. Right now, we're just making recommendations, so we have no control over whether the pitchers actually follow them. If we were able to get a pitcher on board to try out our system, we might be able to report those analytics, and that'd be real exciting.
So are you going to, once the World Series is over, are you going to give yourself your own batting average and how well you did and how well you predicted?
I suppose we could, yeah. See how well whether pitchers went with our advice, whether when they took their advice it was successful or not. We're excited to see that, too.
How hard would it be to take this particular technology and apply it to another sport?
So we've done it to at least one other sport. We had a model for the NCAA basketball tournament. We called it Smart Bracket. And that, I guess, wasn't for the actual sport playing, but that was for developing a bracket. What's the optimal bracket you can pick to win a pool?
I think you did fairly well with that. You were above average, if I remember, when you guys did the announcement, right?
That's right. We were above average on that.
It's amazing to see how data analytics is changing sports. There was an example I heard about recently on a NASCAR race where they called a very untraditional pit stop, usually only called by the pit boss. However, in this case, it was called by a data analytics provider. So I think you're right on par, Neil, that you're idea is going to start to shape sports for the future using data.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about how this all fits in with what you're doing at Supported Intelligence. Now, I know we had Jeff Johnson, your COO, on a couple shows ago talking in general mm-hmm. about it. But how does this all fit into what you're doing overall?
So our hope is that this will generate some attention for our company and eventually attention for our other products. We use the same analytics capabilities to provide decision analytics services to companies. In particular, we offer marketing and promotional strategy solutions, inventory management solutions, and investment and financial analysis solutions.
And can you give us an example on how that's worked in the business world?
It's worked well. We have a few clients we're working with now. Our marketing and promotional strategy we're particularly proud of. We've done a case study with our method on a charitable organization, and we found that they were doing a direct mail campaign, and we were able to find that we could segment their customers or their donors in this case, figure out which ones were most likely to donate and send out less promotions and get or send out less mailings and get more donations in return, and we were able to improve if they were to follow our strategy, improve their returns by over 30%. So we're pretty excited about
it. Are you listening, Kathleen? I'm watching your head bob up and down.
Well, that's a quite competitive area to be in. It's very interesting to me that you did that. That whole area of marketing statistics, it's hugely populated. And, of course, there are gorillas in the space, like a company called Blackbaud that's been around about 25 years. So you guys must have found something very unique. And that's pretty interesting and pretty exciting coming out of Michigan. So I'd be pleased to know more about this company. I'm glad I'm sitting in the studio.
Might be something that MCWT, hit the bell, could use. Right?
Have you heard of MCWT, the Michigan Council of Women in Technology?
I have not, but I will certainly look into it.
Okay, it's a 12-year-old organization, 13 actually. Nope, maybe even longer than that. I'm there 13. It's about 15 years old, and the organization does nothing but try and promote and foster women in the tech fields, which, as you know, there is a dearth of those still, unfortunately. But we're changing. Do check it out, www.mcwt.org. Do we have to hit the bell again?
Yeah, hit the bell again. Yeah. Ooh, okay. Shameless plug. Okay, that's good. All right, so one more time, let's see. It's Pitch FX, and you're going to be tweeting it out under. Is that the handle you're going to be tweeting it out under?
Twitter. At Smart Pitcher.
At Smart Pitcher. Okay, good.
That's right.
And so you looked at a million. You didn't literally look at a million pitches, right? That's just what's in the database, right?
We look at every single pitch that the batter sees. So these batters in particular saw about 3,000 pitches over the last 3 years.
And that's
pitches that were thrown are over a million.
Where did that data come from? Is it online someplace? Or I mean, I know baseball is the most heavily statistically analyzed game there is, right? So.
Yeah, okay. So, well, good. Let's. If they want to find out more about Supported Intelligence, why don't you give them that address on the web? Neil, are you with us?
Did we lose you, Neil?
Yeah.
Oh, he dropped out. Well, we're talking to ourselves here. But anyway, it's Supported Intelligence. It's www.supportedintelligence.com.
And the product is Rapid Recursive?
Rapid Recursive.
We have them back.
Oh, we have them back. Okay, we were just talking. So I was asking if folks want to learn more, how they can contact you to learn more directly, I mean.
That's right. Well, you can go to our website, supportedintelligence.com, or you can email me, Nandrson, at supportedintelligence.com.
You might want to repeat that.
It's Nandrson at supportedintelligence.com. Yeah, I'd love to talk to anyone more about Smart Pitcher. We're real excited about it.
Great.
And sounds interesting.
And you can, of course, read the story at mitechnews.com. We have it up for last week, but it's in our newsletter on Friday. Learn more about it there. And again, Neil's address is there and all the other details you want to learn. Anything else you want to say, Matt?
Well, I it's just interesting to me, Neil. I asked you before, and apparently your phone cut out. Where did you get statistics on a million pitches? Where did that come from?
That's right. That's from the PitchFX database. MLB has installed the system and recorded every single pitch since 2007. God.
Well, I know baseball fans are crazy for statistics, so this is just another example of that, I guess.
Left-handed, one-eyed guy hitting the ball on a Tuesday. They got a statistic on that, right?
While walking Wittershins three times around an oak tree. Right?
Well, there you go.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's it for this segment. Thanks for being with us, Neil. And we'll have
thank you.
Hopefully everybody will check this out this week during the World Series and see how you guys do. This is Mike Brennan.
And Matt Rausch.
Mets.
That was a New Yorker chiming in there, so we'll just disregard. Okay. So this is M2 TechCast, M Squared TechCast. We'll get this right.
Hey, we're back with the M Squared TechCast. It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan. And, well, Matt has a guest from his tech tour last week.
Yep. One of the more interesting places I visited on the tech tour was Ferris State University. They have something called the School of Built Environment, which is part of their College of Engineering Technology. And the program coordinator there for construction technology and management programs is named Suzanne K. Miller. She is a registered architect, and she's also a LEED professional. That's Leadership in Energy and Engineering Design or something like that. I forget exactly what the acronym stands for. But it's basically high-tech buildings. Now, what's high-tech about buildings, you ask? Well, I'm going to have Suzanne talk about what's high-tech about buildings. But first, Suzanne, tell me about the programs that you run at Ferris State, please. And welcome.
Okay, well, thank you very much for welcoming me to the program. To talk a little bit about our programs, construction management, you know, a lot of people don't even realize that it's an actual college degree. You can go and get a full-blown bachelor degree and even master's degrees in it. There is an art to constructing a building. It isn't simply running out into the field, grabbing some materials, and slapping things together. The way our focus is right now in our program, we are really trying to mirror what's happening in industry, and quite honestly, that means bringing a lot of technology into the classroom. We're very much an experiential learning type program. Most of our classes are lab-based, so there might be a lecture, but you are going to have a hands-on lab to get exposure to building materials, building practices, building methods, determining quantity takeoffs on buildings, scheduling, all of that. But a big focus actually is becoming the use of technology.
And so you've got people using design software of the type we think about mostly as being used in manufacturing, right?
Absolutely. And that's what I think is so unique about what is going on in our industry right now. Everyone, I'd say almost 15 years ago, it was a big deal when we went from hand drafting to AutoCAD. You know, that was kind of the first big jump. Our next big jump right now is everybody moving into this three-dimensional modeling of the building. And it's so helpful for our industry because if you really, really push it and utilize it properly, that three-dimensional model can be used to not only help you schedule the project, which is what we kind of call the fourth dimension, but you can also use it to calculate project costs, or what we call the fifth dimension. And the ultimate goal of what we're seeing a lot of building owners wanting is what we call the sixth dimension, or sometimes the X dimension. And that looks at project lifecycle management information. So think of what normally would be a really, really large binder or set of binders given to an owner on here's how to maintain and operate your building's systems. Think of all the mechanical, all the electrical systems that are required to allow our buildings to run now. And they want to be able to pull that up on a model and click on a portion of the building and realize that air handling unit has, you know, this type filter in it, and it was last changed on this date, and it's due for a change, you know, on this date in the future.
So tell me a little bit about the emphasis on energy conservation as well. That buildings are really kind of the last front on that, right? We've dealt with cars. They're going to be getting 55 miles a gallon, more or less, by 2025. Manufacturing facilities have gotten much more efficient, but, you know, factories, but not buildings. I mean, a house, you know, is still kind of the same kind of energy user it was, you know, a few years ago. Talk about how, you know, what the trends are in that direction.
Well, and the trends are, and you're absolutely right, that we actually have calculated that it's about 40% of the world's energy actually goes toward buildings. And when you look at what we're consuming, it's amazing what actually goes into the buildings. So one of the big focuses that you'll hear often in industry is, you know, green design or green buildings, and hence that lead, you know, leadership in energy and environmental design.
Oh, I knew I got it wrong. All right. Go ahead.
I know you were close. You were really close. But it really is this focus on, you know, conservation of our resources. How do we do that? Well, it's not looking at just the water and our potable water, but it's what happens with storm water runoff, for example, when water hits our sites. You know, and I could go a little bit further into that, but I know we're going to focus a little bit more on the energy usage side, and that is one of the big components of this. When you look at what the average cost on a building now, when you look at mechanical and electrical systems, it runs pretty close to almost 40%. And that's because we have such a focus on not only the user comfort and making sure the building functions the way we need, but partly to conserve energy, we are having to implement other items into it. Think sensors on faucets. Think sensors on lighting systems in rooms, or sensors that are so intelligent that they can recognize when there's enough daylight coming into the space that lights don't need to be turned on. Part of what we do in this three-dimensional modeling is a portion of that. When we create these three-dimensional models, we can actually run systems checks on them. And if you look at how, like, the building is oriented, you know, is this the best orientation for the building to take advantage of solar heat gain when you want it and to avoid it when you don't want it? It's a matter of looking at how efficient we can get with our mechanical systems. How can we bring down, for example, the amount of cooling that's needed in a facility? Well, you know, one of the easy things is we look at going with a white roof. Or you could look at, like, a green roof, like you might see on, like, the Ford Rouge plant, for example. You know, you bring the outdoors to the top of there, and all of a sudden I don't have as much solar heat gain coming into my facility, so I can lessen my energy loads because I'm not having to cool the building as much.
Go ahead, Mike.
This is Mike Brennan. Energy efficiency, actually, from what I've read, is the easiest thing that everyone could do to save energy. I mean, just simple things like weather stripping your door or your windows or caulking and things like that. Now, that's a little different from what we're talking about here, but it's sort of in the same ballpark. So, I mean, would you agree that doing these things is a great way to save a lot of energy, obviously, right?
Oh, it is. You know, one of the big ones people often talk about is insulation, insulation of your building. You know, think about, we used to do so much construction with, if we look at residential, 2x4s. Well, if I go to a 2x6, I've just now gained, you know, additional space to be able to fit more insulation within my wall. Or we're starting to see other technology out there using things like prefabricated wall panels. That are structural integrated panels that have the foam inside of them, and they actually become an integral part of the structure on the side of a building. And that's the type of technology we're seeing pull in here as well.
All right. I wanted to ask about something that I'm sure will be near and dear to our other guests here right now. I looked around at Ferris when I was there, and I saw an awful lot of boys in the room and not a lot of girls. How do we get more women interested in this program? I mean, you got interested in it. How did you get interested in it?
Actually, the sad thing is I fell into it by accident, and I didn't realize that construction was a career. I was going to school for architecture. As you mentioned, I'm a registered architect. And I was actually looking to make myself more marketable as an architect. And I knew that the one designer at the firm I had been working for a few summers, and as well as a year between undergraduate and graduate school, was really well respected because he understood construction, how the building components fit together, logical dimensions to place them on. And so my program had several dual degree offerings, and I thought, I'm at school, I'm spending the time in graduate school anyway, why not add the other degree? It was only going to add a semester of time for me. So I added the construction management degree, thought, well, what good is a degree without putting it to use? At least it's having some experience, otherwise it's just a piece of paper. So I actually went into one summer as a summer internship in construction down in the southeast Detroit area, and I absolutely fell in love with it and never went back to architecture.
I will tell you that you are not alone. The three of us happen to be in information technology in one way, shape, or form, and I've been in it for 35 years, and I have so many friends who moved into the field by happenstance because all of a sudden they saw something that was exciting or something, as you just pointed out, that would create more value in terms of their value to the marketplace. We'll talk about it in a few minutes. So we just came out of a conference. So there's a whole bunch of people who said to us, well, we were doing this one thing, and instead we moved over to IT and combined them. It's got to be the same in what you're doing.
I think hearing from women like you is also very powerful. And I think all of us can learn to share this story with the young women that we influence. And I think Ferris could have a good case study by looking at what the Engineering Society of Detroit does with their Smart Michigan Building Competition, which has many components. So I think it's building a bridge of interest early and then showcasing awesome programs like the one that you're speaking about later on.
And that was Kathleen Norton-Schock. That was Kathleen Norton-Schock. And then Nicole Johnson, just so everybody wants to know who that was. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yep, no, it is a matter of getting out there and helping people realize this is an option, it is a career, and, you know, what can you do with it? Most people don't even know what construction management is. Frankly, it's a fantastic field to go into. It's really wonderful if you're a woman. A lot of females like attention to detail. We like the problem solving. It's just a slightly different type of problem solving. People often think problem solving is math or it's just science. No, this is a different type of problem solving. It's taking those components, but it's bringing people into the mix and logistics and everything else with it.
Outside of your academic involvement, obviously, do you belong to professional associations that support your career goals? Like CAM, for instance?
I am a little bit remiss in that. I am a lead AP that's more, you know, keeping up with my registration, but I don't actually belong to any specific societies, no.
Might be interesting to think about in the future.
Yes, it would be.
All right, so my original question remains is you know, how do we get more women involved in this?
A lot of times our big discussion that we've been having with our industry advisory board and other individuals is actually getting people to understand what construction is at a much younger age. A lot of times I'm recruiting at the high school, But we need to start planting the seeds younger at the middle school age, getting them really interested in, you know, in what these different options are, allow them to be able to come and see what construction is, walk out onto a job site, learn what that takes. Job shadowing is another very helpful method of doing that if you can get the students interested in doing it, because if you get them out on a construction site and explain what's happening and ask them, well, how would you do this? How would you proceed? It really can get them thinking about what their options could be.
And at an even younger age, buy Legos for Christmas.
I like it, Kathleen. Thank you. Thank you so much, Suzanne Miller, for being with us today. She is program coordinator of the Construction Technology and Management Programs and an associate professor at Ferris State University in Big Rapids. And if people want more information about the program, Suzanne, I'm sure there's a website, right? Can you give us the address real quick? It's ferris.edu/something.
And it should be /CTMG.
Okay, ferris.edu/CTMG. That's the website. Once again, thanks, Suzanne Miller from Ferris. And we are going to go to a break right now. We'll be back with the Divas. Oh, we collided on the way to that pit there, didn't we?
Okay. All right, this is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Roush.
And we're on M Squared TechCast, the final segment. And we have with us, gosh, old friends. Well, no, I got to be careful how I say that.
Long-time friends.
Yeah, I said that to Ken Rogers last week and looked at me like, what? You know, so I didn't know. I didn't mean that. So we have with us the former Digital Divas, and they'll explain all that as we go along. And now they're the Diva Tech Talk, but it's sort of like the Mod Squad. We have three of them here, and they come from different backgrounds. And we have the Flower Child, Baby Boomer, Kathleen Norton Shark. We have the Gen Xer, Nicole Johnson Scheffler.
Yep.
Gotta get that right. And she's from Cisco, has a very strong IT background. And then we have Amanda Luan, who's the writer in the group, who runs Bamboo Detroit, Michipreneur.com. Gosh, what
and
don't
she's
you
the,
do?
She's
right?
the millennial. You've
she's
got
the
all
millennial.
Three
yes, that's pretty cool. That gets us into the Mod Squad here. So.
You'll see our theme of diversity among diversity.
Okay.
Not just on our team, but also on our podcast.
I like it.
So they've been a partner of mine. I've been picking up their podcast for, gosh, what about a, how long do you get? Is it a year?
January.
Now? Yeah, I was trying to remember when we started. Mm-hmm. Then there was a mid-course correction. There was some issues with the name. And tell us all about that. It's your story.
Yeah,
here.
Well, honestly, it wasn't so much of an issue as we initially had this idea we would be Digital Divas in Detroit. And then Nicole and Amanda both jumped on that and said, Kathleen, you know we're going to go nationwide sooner than later. And we did
yes.
within 2 months. So they were completely correct. So we named ourselves Digital Divas And we checked the trademarks. We checked – we bought a whole bunch of things. And then we discovered that, of course, while we might own our website, et cetera, there are a few digital divas out there. And it just seemed after the fact to be a bit hackneyed. So around the spring, we began to ask some of our fans, some of the people we've already recorded, certainly our constituency, what they thought. We got a bunch of names in the hopper, and we came up with something that combined who we were and gave a strong focus to what we're doing in the future, but kept the name Diva because, let's face it, all three of us are divas, and most of the people we interview are in the most positive way as well. So we're now Diva Tech Talk, and what we do is we focus on women who can be very excellent role models for other women who we want to see encouraged to join STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, arts, and math combined missions. So that's what we're doing.
And I'll do a shameless plug here in that I was part of the Inforum Engage program. And through that, I realized how important our brand was. And that was part of our decision to rebrand and go strong with Diva Tech Talk. And we're not turning back. So we're excited to be here.
And then we have the quiet one there, Amanda Luan, who's actually very busy, has many rods in the fire. What did you start first? Was it Bamboo Detroit and then Michipreneur, or how did that work out?
They were started about around the same time. So Bamboo Detroit is a co-working space. We're actually the largest co-working community in Detroit. We have over 100 entrepreneurs, all different types of companies and people, and they share office space and work together to grow their business. And then Michipreneur is an online resource. It started off as a blog. We recently relaunched it a few months ago. So it could be a more interactive platform, sort of like the online community matching up with our physical community downtown.
So, and I think one of the most interesting things about us is how we all met. So Nicole and I met because we're both very strong volunteers for the Michigan Council of Women in Technology. Hit the bell, please. Mm-hmm. And we talked about on the
That's a nonprofit, though. I'm not sure. Do we have
Is a nonprofit.
Yeah, okay.
And a tremendous organization. But I met Amanda even before Nicole and I became very good friends because I happen to be the co-founder of a company called Arden Cause.
Definitely the bell on that one. Okay.
The very first L3C in the state of Michigan, which stands for Low Profit Limited Liability Corporation.
Oh, so maybe ring the bell softly because it's low profit.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
And you can think of that as a for-profit company with a nonprofit soul.
Yeah.
With a 35-year career in IT, 6 years ago, one of my best friends and I decided that for our next mission, what we wanted to do was take our skills and devote it to a field we felt was underserved. Well, I happened to meet Amanda because Amanda had founded Michipreneur, was looking for outstanding entrepreneurs to interview, and happened to interview my partner and I, Rosemary Bayer.
Actually, I think you were celebrating 5 years, which is tremendous. Not a lot of startups make it past the 5-year point. And Bamboo Detroit, too, is an L3C, so we have a social mission making it more affordable downtown, which is exploding with all the energy and entrepreneurship.
And the rent is exploding.
And realistically, we serve all Detroiters. So we have members who are – we have a 12-year-old entrepreneur from Brightmoor, and we just serve everyone and act as this very inclusive, diverse space, which is very important if you're talking about building Detroit or the Detroit's Renaissance. So Kathleen's also a really great mentor in helping us – think about our L3C and scale our business as we grow.
So, Amanda, tell me a little bit about Bamboo Detroit. Like, how many square feet do you have? And are you at capacity? Are you adding space? What's going on with that?
We're at about 3,500 square feet, and we have 100 entrepreneurs. It's all shared, open co-working space. So we are working on expanding so we can offer private mixed with open because we just get so many requests from people who want to be in our community but need a little bit more of that private office space. So as we grow, we're going to sort of curating and expanding so that we serve as like the center for entrepreneurship, kind of like in 1871 in Chicago. You can pop in, catch a networking event, find investors, lawyers, everyone who serves the entrepreneur in one place.
And it's amazing, some of the events, of course, because Amanda, Nicole, and I are all connected in a very strong way and now very good friends. We get invited to all these things. I typically go to the parties, but I do occasionally attend.
I find that so hard to believe.
Occasionally attend some of the other events, and the content is simply outstanding.
Speaking of good content, that's what we're doing with our Women in Tech podcast, right? We're mixing interviews where women share their personal journey, but really with a professional twist. And then we're also covering events. So just looking at our not even a year history, we've been at South by Southwest, where Amanda was on the ground. I just got back from Grace Hopper, which was an amazing women in tech conference down in Houston, Texas.
Mm-hmm. She made 12,000 friends.
Yeah, I made 12,000 of them. Many of them got my business card. And we are covering HIMSS. So it's a real nice mix, and we've gotten a lot of great support from the community.
HIMSS, by the way, because you were looking for headlines before, but you had so many, it was silly to talk about this. But we were at HIMSS today, and we'll be at it tomorrow. HIMSS, by the way, stands for the Healthcare Information and Management Systems Society. It's a very long, it's a very old association, but the ninth technology event is taking place in Detroit. Started on Sunday, will end tomorrow, which is Tuesday, October 27th. We will talk in a few minutes, I'm sure, about some of the amazing interviews we captured there. And, of course, Nicole would like to talk about the one she captured at Grace Hopper. But if you go to our website, www.divatechtalk.com, you can see the 12 that are already published.
And that's interesting to me, the whole healthcare informatics thing, because women's career choices in healthcare used to kind of be limited to nursing, right? You know, now they can do so many other things within the healthcare system that it's exploding. I know the bioengineering programs that are being offered at Michigan universities that I was just at the tech tour are going crazy. And that's one of the areas where we're at gender parity in engineering is with bioengineering.
Well, what's interesting today for me was our very first interview was with the chief nursing officer for IBM's global health practice, who happened to start out 30-some-odd years ago as an RN, as a registered nurse, mm-hmm. and through a series of happenstances, migrated in her career. And like so many of the women we just met this morning, would talk to you about a whole environment of continuous learning, whether it be OJT on the job or getting certifications or going to school. But honestly, these first three podcasts we did today, all of these women said, we learned more on the job by our associations, which is why I asked that of your previous caller, mm-hmm. the academic environment just doesn't keep up.
Right.
There used to be a 7-year half-life to normal knowledge. We know in the IT field that I've been in 35 years, there used to be a 2-year half-life in IT. It's now maybe 6 months.
Yeah, I was going to say dog years. Right.
And when you put it together with healthcare, which is changing on the ground as we speak and the greatest growing area, certifications are fine. Learn on the job.
We got about 4 minutes left, so let's talk about this big interview. Who'd you interview?
Well, I got to interview 4 different people at Grace Hopper, and again, I'm all about diversity, so I got to interview one of the scholarship recipients, which was only 500 of the 12,000 people, and it's amazing to see among all of the attendees this push towards data analytics and computer science, and she was a great example of that in a great 3-year program. I also got to interview the VP, Kim Snipes from Capital One. She does the banking and finance area. And I also got a developer from ESPN. And lastly, I got to interview Alyssa Shavinsky, who is a author and CEO of her own security company. So all of those are going to be coming up in the next few weeks on our blog, on our website. And
I think when Kathleen walked in, she said you're booked until February or something.
Well, we are. With today, between today and tomorrow, we'll have 8 podcasts. We have 5 from last week. We have a whole bunch already out there that are being re-released with additional information about them. Today also we got Mary Alice Anacharico, who's the Senior VP and CIO for Henry Ford Health Systems, and Carla Smith, who happens to be the National Executive Director for HIMSS, the association I mentioned earlier.
Great.
Now, do you have a set length for the podcast, or is it whatever you feel like or however interesting the person is?
We capture them all on divatechtalk.com, and then we're pushing out to several of the listening channels for podcasts. Right now, Stitcher and SoundCloud, soon to be iTunes as this rebrand takes a final lap.
Yeah. But he's talking about the length of them, and I will tell you that we've had some short ones, 12, 13 minutes. When we have really short ones, we put them together into one cast, similar to what you're doing today. Mm-hmm. But I just did one with a tremendous entrepreneur who you may remember, Tracy Ann Palmer.
Oh, yeah.
Entrepreneur.
Do I remember Tracy? She's one of the first people I met with at WWJ. That was, I won't tell you how long ago that was.
And it happens to be a good friend of ours. And hers was 24 minutes because even without all the material she gave us, Nicole could only edit it down to 24 minutes.
Wow.
It was compelling enough we left it that way.
Okay.
And I'll try to get you guys back up now that we're all refocused back on as a partner on mitechnews.com, where we have 8 different content partners, including michipreneur.com. So you'll be able to pick it up there, and I'm sure Bob and Dave would probably be pretty interested in picking up your podcast as well for the Podcast Detroit Network, which I believe is at 24 partners, right?
Shows about that.
Yeah, somewhere in that ballpark. So lots of ways for you to pick it up. Certainly going to the original website is one. We got about a minute left. Anybody want to recap here?
www.divatechtalk.com. On Facebook, Diva Tech Talk in Detroit. You'll find the Detroit address there. And also on Twitter, we can be found at Diva Tech Talks. Hashtag Diva Tech Talks.
And we're open to meeting you, hearing your ideas, meeting other really inspiring women. So if you've worked with someone or noticed someone in a leadership role in technology that you just want to shout out, please send them our way. That's going to help raise the number of women in technology and make a better difference for our region.
Yeah, and we really appreciate all the support we've gotten from our Detroit peers, including Mike and Matt and many of the others, Dave and Bob, and just so many people. And we just hope to continue to inspire women in technology with our awesome podcast. And I think we're all sitting here very grateful for all the women we've been able to talk to and all the stories we've been able to share. And this is just the beginning.
Well, what is there to say, Matt?
This is just the beginning of this, too. We hope to be back with you for many more Monday afternoons. This is the M2 TechCast, today's October 26, 2015 edition. Want to thank our guests today, Neil Anderson, Suzanne Miller, and, of course, Nicole and Amanda and Kathleen Norton-Schock from Diva Tech Talk.
And our ace engineer, Jessica.
Jessica.
You almost said Jennifer.
This is one of them days.
Good old what's-her-name.
This is one of them days, I'll tell you. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, and this is Mike Brennan. I can say that right.
All right, and this is Matt Rausch, and that's about all I can say at this point, too.
All right, and this has been M Squared TechCast.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.
This is a previously recorded episode.